Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Your host today, Marty Jones. And our guest today is Jeff Tokar, the Vice President of the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue Group. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for the music that you're hearing and Daniel Boyce for the bird songs that you're hearing. So, welcome, Jeff Tokar, the Vice President of Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue, better known as AVSAR. He's a seasoned veteran of the team. He's going to talk to us about AVSAR, their mission and purpose, and promote, hopefully, the event that's coming up on August 19th, Suds for SAR.
Well, thank you very much for the invite. You bet. What do they say? You have to plug it seven times or something but get people to remember. I may not say it that many times, but Suds for SAR, 19th of August, August 19th.
And as long as you're mentioning that, where is it going to be?
Yeah, certainly. It's right here in Alamosa. It's the premier social event of the summer. It'll be right there next to SLV Brewery. We'll have the block closed off. We'll have beer sales there, obviously, with SLV hosting. Proceeds, part of that, going to the team. We'll also have a silent auction running from about 3 to 8. We'll have a cornhole tournament, 5:30 to 7:30, and we'll have three live bands performing on stage there, right there on the block.
So I know that Blue Sky is one of the bands. They've always been supportive of AVSAR. Do you know who the other bands are?
I have the list right here, so let me call up. I know Old Scratch.
Very good. Who comes? Yeah. They're excellent band.
They're almost all there every year, and then the third band is Company of Friends.
Oh, very good. Yeah. All local bands, all local. Supporting the local efforts of the Volunteer Search and Rescue here in Alamosa. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us about AVSAR in general, and then we can talk about some more specific aspects in a little bit.
Sure. AVSAR is the local search and rescue. I think we've just said Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue. We actually are formed under the sheriff's office. We execute search and rescue under the sheriff's office. Here in the state of Colorado, search and rescue is the purview of the chief law enforcement officer of the particular county. Each county can choose how they want to do that. In the case of Sheriff Jackson, he's chosen to work with us, and we are a 501 charitable organization. All of our funding is donations, although we are working with the county and some others to get perhaps maybe some budgeted line items into the future, which would certainly support us. Everybody's a volunteer. There are no paid positions, and we've got everybody from someone like me, who's maybe not the youngest person in the valley, to some, quite honestly, some pretty eager, up-and-coming young men and women that really are pretty critical to the team, right? We have a wide range of skill sets. You don't have to be some sort of premier mountain climber or something like that, or have a deep background in it. We are looking for volunteers at any given time. I will say it's a pretty deep time commitment, right, because there's a lot of training involved. But basically what we do is if someone gets in trouble in the backcountry, and in this area that means the Blanca Massive, right, that's what we're talking about in Alamosa, we're the ones that will go out for search, rescue, and unfortunately sometimes recovery.
So. How many active members do you have on the team?
So we have about, I didn't look at the final list, we've got close to 30 active members right now, and again, varying roles. We also have some that are active, but not maybe every mission. So we have, for example, specialized off-road vehicle drivers. So we can go up and down Coma Road if aviation assets aren't available. And we have other folks like that are specialty folks, folks that do accounting for us, for example, those sort of things. So, but about 30 members active, yeah.
And it's a mix of both men and women, I believe, isn't it?
Men and women, young and old, yeah. So Crystal Wilson's our president, right? And she, of course, you know, I'm the vice president. We have three other board members, recent additions, thankfully. We also have, but yes, we have a mix of basically college age all the way through. I may not be the oldest, but I'm pretty close to it. So, I'll be 61 this weekend. So we've got quite a range, yeah.
Happy birthday this weekend.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
I know you talked about a pretty heavy-duty time commitment because there's a lot of training. Last year, I was out with my friend on a bike ride, and we happened to be riding past, coming back into town, we rode past the Family Rec Center. There was a helicopter on the ground, and a young woman that I know who's on the team was kind of directing us away from, said, yeah, this is AFSAR training from the helicopter rescues and things of that sort. So can you please either keep riding on, don't stay where you are right now.
Right.
So what kinds of training is involved to be a member of the SAR?
So you've called out an obvious one, which is we work a lot with aviation assets from around the strait, quite honestly, and that requires that we get familiar with the operations of those helicopters and the operations of the helicopter crews. So in order for our team members to be able to utilize those aviation assets to get a lift, to get a ticket, what we call lift ticket, to get a ride up the mountain, we need to go through annual training. And generally, that happens several times because there are several different air crews throughout the state. We also have a team of seven of us that are what's called STEP certified. So we have the ability to be inserted from a hovering helicopter that doesn't even set down. We do that training monthly with Canyon LATAC. It's part of the Colorado Wildfire Division, Firefighting Division. Very specialized training, very intense, minimum once a month. The team itself, then on top of that, we have monthly meetings here at the sheriff's office every month. Some of those are just administrative or we're going through various activities, but we also have training involved usually with those meetings. So that might be medical training. There might be training on incident command and how our incident command works. So team members are familiar with how we manage an incident or how our incident command team manages. We have monthly weekend training, and that can be anything from, for example, this past weekend we did a training hike up Zapata Trail, all the way to Zapata Lake. So we loaded up our team members as if they were going on an actual mission, ropes, gear, litter, everything they would need to actually do a rescue, and sent them up to the lake. And so if you've never done that before, it's a real eye-opener to go up 5 miles, 5 miles there and 5 miles back with, 40 pounds plus on your back. We do a significant amount of technical training, rope training, right? So maintain our rope skills and also teach people how, for example, if someone's cliffed out or stuck or injured on a scree field or on a cliff, how can we extract those people, right? How can we help them out? So whether it's a vertical lower or a haul or different things, there's a lot of techniques. Plus, those techniques are constantly changing and improving. Gear changes, techniques change. We spend a lot of time, especially our lead technical people, working with some of the premier search and rescue teams around the state or around the country, learning different techniques. And then we take those into the team and teach people how to do those. So you're looking at several times a month, you're doing training or meetings, you've got all the missions, and then if you're on like with the STEP team or something like that, now you can have additional training every month.
Does AFSAR have its own vehicles for being transported into the wilderness?
We do. We have two vehicles. One is an older Yukon that was donated to us. We've recently upgraded to what we call our primary vehicle now, that we were able to procure just within the last year. We were able to get a grant for about half of it, and we were able to generate donations for the other half. So we have a full-size Ram 2500, four-wheel drive that pulls around our command trailer, and also we use it to store and secure a lot of our technical gear. But yeah, absolutely, we do. Now I will tell you on the Massive, those are limited use, right? We really can't get up and down the mountain without specialized gear or without aviation assets. So yeah.
And do you go other places than the Blanca Massif? For example, do you go as far up as into the Crestones?
You betcha. So our primary operating area of operations for your former military listeners, AO, is, of course, Alamosa County, because that's where our authority is under the sheriff. However, because we are we've developed into one of the better teams in the area and better resource teams in the area. We get called out quite often for mutual aid in the surrounding counties, right? Especially here in the valley, whether it's Calibra all the way up to Sawatch, you know, or beyond. So we do get called out. Now we refer to those as mutual aid. Generally, the county that it's occurring in requests our assistance, and assuming that sheriffs agree, because that is a sheriff-to-sheriff process, then yeah, we will absolutely provide assets and resources to go support. We're up in the Crestones on a consistent basis, or up in Sawatch, and that we've done missions several already this year in those areas, down to Calibra, other places. We did an avalanche rescue recovery, unfortunately. And so we've done others in the area that were all mutual aid. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Calibra area because that's primarily private property, or at least the top of Calibra Peak is private property. Is that something that is difficult to work with?
Not really. The group that the folks down there, Carlos and others, they're really great, quite honestly. They've got a pretty decent system for checking people in and out, you know, that have gotten the lottery and the permits to go hike. But when they do get a lost hiker, we've got a good relationship with them and with Danny, with Casilla County Sheriff. And so they'll know if they need assistance to reach out to us. We don't ever go into another county or another jurisdiction, you know, without obviously the sheriff's coordinating and permission. And we haven't been down in Calibra this year. We did a mission there last year. Yeah, but we coordinate with them. Quite honestly, it's a really good working relationship with the crew down there. Yeah, we're real happy with how we work with them.
This is not just a summertime activity. You mentioned an avalanche victim that you recovered. So Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue operates year-round.
We do operate year-round. We don't do as much winter missions as we do spring, summer, fall, you know, especially the shoulder seasons, right? For any number of reasons, not the least of which is we're remote far enough out that you just don't see a lot of winter remote backcountry activity on the Massif, for example. Not a lot of people climb Blanca to go, you know, backcountry skiing. It's very remote, very hard to get into. So you just don't see a lot of that, but we certainly train for it. So we do avalanche train. We have the gear to work in the snow if we need to. We do train throughout the winter, so we train year round, and that includes in the seasonal appropriate training. So we will train in the winter for winter training. We have the ability to, you know, the gear we need if we need to go do a rescue recovery. We certainly will.
Have you been on very many missions in 2023 thus far?
We've been on a handful, yeah. We just had a series of rescues, actually, recently. We pulled some people off of the traverse between Little Bear and Blanca. We've done mutual aid up in Sawatch. We've done a pretty good, decent amount. We're really kind of getting into the busy season for us. It's been a weird weather year, I think everybody knows, right? At least on the Sangre side, on the Massif side, very dry, right? Not a lot of monsoon activity. Usually this time of year, we don't see a lot of people, as many people, you know, spending all day up there because, you know, everybody, the experienced hikers understand, get off the mountain by noon, right?
Yes, I mean, right.
But this year, we just haven't had that real challenge. So it'll be interesting to see as the year continues to go, how much more is going to spin up. But typically, this is when we start really getting into our busy season. But yeah, we've had a handful of missions already this year.
Are you anticipating, since you mentioned the weather, the unusual weather this season, have you had any experiences that have involved for this area anyway, high temperatures of the summer, heat exhaustion, heat stroke, anything of that sort?
Yeah, so we haven't necessarily been called out directly for heat stroke or heat injuries, but when we've done these rescues, you certainly see the impact of it, right? So we had a recent rescue, and the subject was, it was clear that the environment was taking its toll, to the point where we were talking about, you know, kidney shutdown, right? So they had lost a considerable amount of water, dehydration, exposure. It's not only just the heat, but to your point, the dryness, right? And of course, once you go up the mountain, even if you don't have that direct intense heat, you certainly have that dryness. For the, you know, the higher you get up on the mountain, the drier it gets for all intents and purposes. So yeah, we are very sensitive to that. And when you are operating this environment, you're almost more sensitive to what your team is going through, right? Because when you're going up to look for a subject, hopefully they've smart enough to stay put and stay placed. So even if they might be dehydrated or maybe even having some heat issues, they're not moving, right? We're trying to convince them not to move. And if we've been called out, one of the first things we tell people is don't move. A lot easier for us to find you. But our team has to move into them. And so we spend a lot of time training medically, but that's almost as much so we can keep an eye on each other, right? To watch each other. Because if you're walking the 4 miles, 5 miles up to Zapata Lake before you even start the rescue, and you've got 70 pounds on your back, and it's, you know, 80 degrees or more at the base, by the time you get up there, if you're not really watching your team members and yourself, you can get into some serious situations. Yeah.
Are there some medical professionals who are a part of the search and rescue team?
You bet. Almost every team member that goes on the mountain at some point or another will go through, as soon as we can get them through, wilderness first responder training. So I'm a wilderness first responder. Almost everybody we go through, we put, if you become a team member and you're going to go up on the mountain, if you're going to be a ground tech or rope tech, technical person, we're going to put you through wilderness first responder training. We also have several actual medical professionals from SLV and others, yeah, that go with us. In fact, we've had this year alone, thankfully, had those people on because they were able to really actually perform some medical procedures that were probably beyond either what most of us would have been able to do as wilderness first responders. So you bet. We're always looking for more. We have EMTs, we have nurses, and others that are on the team. Again, it's not, we'll take whoever comes and we'll slot you in, so to speak. So if you're coming to us with a medical training, you bet you we're going to figure out a way to leverage that in some form or another.
So Jeff, Kevin Wright, who used to be on the search and rescue, wrote a book, I think it was 2015, about the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue. And is that a book that you would recommend anyone who wants to be a member of the team to read in advance?
Hey, it certainly doesn't hurt. You know, I would recommend they read our website first, if they're going to read something first, right? Because it obviously gives a background and you have some idea of our schedule. You see some team members there that are highlighted. A lot of our recent missions are on there. But yeah, the book is a fine book. We recommend people read it for sure. And again, we have Suds for SAR coming up here on the 19th. There are times when we'll actually get that book. That book will be up for all. We'll put it up for silent auction as one of our silent auction items because we absolutely recommend that people read the book. It'd be interesting to see if Kevin wants to do a version, you know, a version two. There's been a lot of activity since then, right? Every year's different. Every mission's different, right? Absolutely. I would recommend to read the book for sure.
Good. And would you mention the website what the website address is for people who want to visit the website?
Sure. www.avsar.us. So AVSAR, Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue, AVSAR.us.
And is there a telephone number for AVSAR, or is it just limited to each individual's phone? Who should they contact if they want to talk to someone by phone?
Yeah, so there's some contact information on the website, so that's probably what I'd point you to first. Now, obviously, if it's an emergency, if you're calling for assistance, you call 911.
Right.
You're right. And 911 will route through the sheriff's office to us, and we'll respond. That's how we get called out. We get called out through the 911 process. And of course, if you're in distress, if you need us, you call 911. If you're just interested in us, go to the website first, There's contact information there. And absolutely, and there's also, there's email contact there too that comes to us. So we're happy to respond that way if that's more convenient for folks. And of course, you can always call the sheriff's office and just ask to talk to one of us, and the sheriff would pass on the message if for whatever reason you can't get to us.
I know that sometimes people are a little hesitant to contact 911, or maybe they don't have a good cell connection or something of that sort.
Sure.
You know, I have an annual fishing license that has a search and rescue surcharge of 25 cents. I'm a senior that's quite a bit senior to Jeff. And so my license, my fishing license is less expensive than if you're less than a senior. But the good thing about the search and rescue surcharge is that if I get into trouble, I call 911, you guys are dispatched. The rescue for me is covered by this fee.
Yeah, so the COSAR fee is an interesting fee, right? There's no charge for search and rescue in Colorado. So if you call 911 and I go up to look for you, or Avsar, go up to look for you, we're not going to charge you for that, ever. You're just never going to get charged for that. Now, if for whatever reason you're injured, helicopter comes in, helicopter transports you to the hospital, well, that's between you and the insurance company, the hospitals, and everything else, because that's like calling an ambulance to your house. That's a medical event, and we're not, other than helping you get to it, we're not, you know, not necessarily involved in that. The COSAR fund and the fund that goes into, what that allows us is that it helps to reimburse AFSAR and AFSAR team members. So what will happen often on missions is gear gets used. And when it gets used, it gets broken, it gets used up. Ropes have a limited lifetime. The hardware has a limited lifetime. Radios break, things get lost, that kind of stuff. So that fund allows us to replace some portion of that, you know, or some percentage of it, depending on, you know, what it is and what it may be. So we are very grateful anytime anybody has whether it's a hunting license, an off-road vehicle registration, or you can just go get the COSAR card directly. And they're very inexpensive. It's a couple of bucks. They're even if you don't qualify for the Wizened discount, it is significantly, they're very inexpensive, and it greatly helps the search and rescue community.
And I think you can get those COSAR cards at Christie Mountain Sports.
You betcha. You can get them at Christie's. Absolutely. Yeah. That's where I'd recommend you go.
Yeah. So if you don't have a fishing license, if you go out into the backcountry, carry one of those cards with you.
You bet.
Go get one. Help out the search and rescue. Let's get back to Suds for SARS. We just have a couple of minutes left.
Sure.
And I'd like you to remind us what time it starts, where it is, and what people can expect.
Yeah, you bet. Suds for SARS, premier social event of the summer here in Alamosa. So it will be at the corner where the SLV Brewery is. We have the block closed off there. I think that's San Juan, right, I believe?
Yeah, it's the Festival Street is the way the city describes it.
Yeah, absolutely.
San Juan, between Main and 4th.
Exactly. So we'll be set up there right between SLV and Woody's. We'll have that blocked off. The event starts at 3 and scheduled to run from 3 to 10. Quite honestly, there'll be enough people there if you wanted to come early. And we'd be happy to have this to see you and help us set up if you want. Silent auction runs from 3 to 8. And we get donations. I know we've got some really good items there. You can check our Facebook site because we post some of that. Probably one of the actual things that I expect, and we're going to have, I'm hoping, quite a bit more, is we have a pennant that was signed by this year's world champion Nuggets.
Oh.
Signed by the entire team. So with certificate of authenticity. So we're hoping that's going to generate a little bit of action and traffic. So cornhole tournament, 5:30 to 7:30.
And is that in the same location?
Yes.
Right on the street.
Right on the street.
Watch out for flying beanbags.
You betcha. Don't want to get whacked by a beanbag. and we'll have our merchandise booth set up there so you can buy AFSAR gear, like the shirt I'm wearing and some of the other things, hats, those sort of things. And three live bands. So we'll have the live bands running generally most of the afternoon and evening. Yeah.
Company of Friends, Old Scratch, and Blue Sky. Three excellent local groups.
And they're wonderful.
Fun to listen to.
Yeah, they're wonderful. They donate. Generally, they are this year. They donate their services to us, so they're playing for free for us. And we really, really do appreciate that. They're a great band. SLV will be selling beer. They'll have a little tapper going out in the street. We get a percentage of that also. So hence these suds for SAR.
Yeah,
so.
and there's food close by.
There's food close by. We'll have the popcorn machine going, so there'll be free popcorn. So they'll, you know, and there's food all around the block, and so yeah, it's a great. I grew up in Los Alamos. I've been coming up here for over 50 years, and I tell you, I love Alamos. It's a great little downtown area. It's I wouldn't call it typical small town because I think, you know, USA, because I think it's got its unique charms that are really interesting, but. If you haven't, you need to go to Sells for SAR on the 19th of August. It is a wonderful event.
It's a dog-friendly event, and in the past, there's been a horse or two as well.
Absolutely. My dog, one of my dogs, we have five, but one I bring on a regular every year. So Odin, for those that know Odin will be there. I know Owen knows Odin, so and many others do, so he'll be there. So come out and hang out with Jeff and Odin at Sells for SAR.
August 19th, 3 to 8 p.m. on Festival Street. That's San Juan Avenue between Main and 4th. Jeff Tokar, the Vice President of Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue. Thanks so much for being here, Jeff. You know, I hope that you don't have very many missions between now and the event.
Thanks for inviting us, and I hope I never have to go up on the mountain. I absolutely will, but I hope they never need me. You are absolutely right about that. So.
Great. All right, thanks a lot. This is the Outdoor Citizen. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Climb aboard the Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad. The Cumbres and Toltec operates on a 64 miles of track between Antonito, Colorado and Chama, New Mexico, taking passengers over the San Juan Mountains to the Conejos Valley. Regular daily passenger service begins June 3rd through October 21st and will run 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. Book now on America's highest, longest, and most authentic steam-operated railroad. Visit our website at CumbresToltec.com.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. We're going to give you some upcoming outdoor events. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure to check it out and stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. Here's a look at the rest of August. Splashland is hosting a kids-only triathlon. They're inviting all kids ages 3 to 14 to participate in a run, bike, and swim on Saturday, August 19th. There are three divisions for different age groups. To register, you can walk into the pool, call them at 719-589-6258, or email splashlandllc@hotmail.com. Also on August 19th is Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue's annual fundraising event, Suds for SAR. Beer, live music, and plenty of opportunities to meet the people on the team and learn about what they do. AVSAR is an all-volunteer team, so fundraising events like these help support them. The event is on San Juan Avenue in downtown Alamosa, starting at 3 p.m. And if you've gotten this far on the Alamosa or on the Outdoor Citizen podcast, you just heard Jeff Tokar talking about Suds for SAR and the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue. On September 9th, SLV Habitat for Humanity is hosting the 2023 Bike to Build, the San Luis Valley Century Community Ride. This year's event features a 65-mile metric century loop and a 35-mile loop. The ride is supported with stops every 20 to 30 miles and SAG vehicles. Organizer Audrey Liu says the Century Ride is a great way to embrace the dramatic 14,000-foot peaks of the Sangre de Cristo and San Juan Mountains. For more information or to register, go to slvhabitat.org/bike-2build, or you can send an email to bikes@slvhabitat.org. And Audrey will be on the podcast in a couple of weeks. We'll get more information and talk in more detail about Bike to Build. Volunteers for Outdoor Colorado has a few upcoming engagements we'd like to tell you about. On August 12th, the Los Pinos Trail Restoration begins in the Rio Grande National Forest. On August 26th, Beaver Dam Analog Construction Projects will begin, also in the Rio Grande National Forest. On September 30th, a two-day habitat restoration project is slated to begin on the Blanca Wetlands. To learn more or to register for a project, visit volunteer.voc.org, or you can contact Katie, that's K-A-T-I-E, at voc.org. On every episode of The Outdoor Citizen, we'll have an outdoor correspondent report from around the San Luis Valley. Here's the latest from outdoor correspondent Maddie Alborn, where she delivers her report on top of Blanca Peak.
Hello, I'm on the summit of Mount Blanca. It's Saturday, July 29th, I think. Up here it's a little breezy, but the sun is mostly shining. I have some clouds coming in on the east side behind me. You can see there. So we're going to start to head down. Marley is doing awesome. Lots of water, food. You know, dogs need sustenance just like people do. So we're going to pack up and head down before those clouds come too far. Looking out over Ellingwood and the most beautiful San Luis Valley. Happy Saturday, y'all. Stay safe out there.
Summer is still here and the sun is still setting late in the day. While we have all this time for outside fun, we'd love to hear from you listeners as you explore the San Luis Valley's great outdoors. We encourage you to record an audio file on your phone and send it to us. We would enjoy seeing a photograph also. You can email info@alamosacitizen.com or text the audio file and photo to 720-891-6759 with your name for credit. Now we have some conditions and measurements for you to keep you up to date on what it's looking like out there. Simply put, it's hot, dry, and the fire danger is high. Here are the latest stream flows entering the week. On the upper Rio Grande, the gauge in Del Norte is reading 307 CFS, Monte Vista 146 CFS, Alamosa is reading a discharge of 88 cubic feet per second. Further south, the Canales River at Magoti is reading 230 CFS. Here are some select fishing reports from the upper Rio Grande and the lower basin of the Arkansas River. For the upper Rio Grande, this report comes from August 2nd, courtesy of Rio Grande Angler Fly Shop and Guide Service. The Rio is holding on to floatable water, with evening rains up high, not down here, unfortunately, but up high. We've been seeing some releases from the reservoir. The fishing has been good. All floatable water is from Wagon Wheel Gap Put-In down to County Road 17. The fish are holding in shallow, fast water in the mornings while the temperatures are cool, moving into heavy seams and mid-river currents later in the day. Think oxygen. With warmer water temperatures, the fish are seeking deeper holding water or buckets underneath big riffles and turbulent currents. And if you have a thermometer, please measure the temperature of the water. If the temperature gets above 70 degrees, consider coming back at another time, either later in the evening or early in the morning. High temperatures, as you learned from previous podcasts with TU members, higher temperatures are really hard on fish. Creek fishing is great right now. Any dry fly pattern should get the job done. Some of our favorite creeks are Lime Creek, Beaver Creek, Park Creek, South Clear Creek, North Clear Creek, or the South Fork of the Rio. On the lower basin of the Arkansas, this is from August 4th, courtesy of Braden Baker of Ark Anglers out of Salida. Fishing is outstanding on the Arkansas right now. Flows are still swift, but are at a normal level for this time of year, pushing fish out to the softer water along the edges where they are opportunistic and competitive in their feeding habits. The flow at the Wellsville gauge is reading a discharge of 996 CFS with an average water temperature between 50 and 60 degrees. The water has good visibility in Salida with even clearer water down to the Valley Bridge. Below the Valley Bridge, the water is still pretty dirty for a couple of miles. Anglers will find fish holding in velocity shelters along the edges and in pocket water. Just takes a little more work than we normally see at this time of year. Trout have been seeing very little angling pressure in recent weeks and will be willing to investigate any possible food drifting through sheltered pockets. We recommend staying out of the water as much as possible while waiting the higher flows. The water you might want to wade into is probably where the fish are. Here on the Outdoor Citizen, we aim to keep you up to date on all the outdoor news that comes our way. Here's a little bit of what's going on outside. Repairs to Forest Road 600, which leads to the Wheeler Geologic Area, has started. After heavy rains caused major damage to sections of the road in September 2022, access was closed. Since then, the Rio Grande National Forest engineers have been planning the work. The work is expected to take 4 weeks. Alamosa Mosquito Control District continues to sound the alarm on West Nile-carrying mosquitoes. The week of July 31st to August 4th had several confirmations. You can help by keeping old tires drained and emptying out any containers that can hold water and allow mosquitoes to breed. Most of southwest Colorado, including the entire San Luis Valley, is under a red flag warning and fire weather watch. A series of fires broke out over the weekend near Wolf Creek Pass and south of the state line in New Mexico. The Court Ridge Fire, which is north and east of Pagosa Springs, but on the San Juan River drainage side of Wolf Creek Pass, as of this morning, that's Tuesday the 8th of August, Quartz Ridge Fire has burned 560 acres in the South San Juan Wilderness Area. Dangerous terrain and fire behavior has made this a difficult fire to tackle. In New Mexico, east of Navajo Lake, the American Mesa Fire has burned 450 acres and is only 8% contained. The Low-Lying Fire in Gunnison, which started almost 2 weeks ago, has burned 1,821 acres and is 55% contained at this time. We'll be sure to watch these fires. And there are additional fires over on the Pagosa side, north and west of Pagosa, and even as far as Durango. So please be careful. If you are outside, know that starting a fire is not a good idea at this time. Well, that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Special thanks to Don Richmond for the music and Daniel Boyce for the bird songs. We'll be back here August 22nd, and our guest will be Audrey Liu, we'll be talking about the 2023 Bike to Build ride on September 9th. We hope you enjoyed listening in. Until next time, we'll see you in the outdoors.